2 weeks from today, correct?
Yes.
Today. Now, if there's interest, I can come earlier to make it easier for the students. I don't know, you know, I think this is one again that have extra time. Is any interest in that? I mean, I could probably be around 5:30 probably. Those are one. I'm going to try.
Hours.
What?
Will they take up 2 hours?
No, hopefully it'll take you no more than the regular time. But if I can come earlier, I may be able to come earlier that day. So, now, if there's interest, I can come earlier to make it easier for the students. I don't know, you know, I think this is one again that have extra time. Is any interest in that? I mean, I could probably be around 5:30 probably. Those are one. I'm going to try. What?
Will they take up 2 hours?
No, hopefully it'll take you no more than the regular time. But if I can come earlier, I may be able to come earlier that day. So, and we learned a little about Abramans, and a lot of time in the Abraman story, so the shop with carrying, and what you're allowed to carry, we had to make an Abram. If there's no Abram, what you're allowed to carry, you're not allowed to carry. A lot of time in that too. Keys and handkerchiefs, all the time. There's a mukta at great length. Now it's going what I might call miscellanea. I have no other better way to describe it. The next few problems we're going to have are really miscellaneous. Alright, and we will cover whatever we can this week and next. No, this week and next, and then I'll be on the machina. And the rest of the homes will go to the final. Okay. The first thing we're speaking about, the official title of this chapter 23, is taking care of your apartment, of your house, on Shabbos. Starts off by saying it's permissible to sweep the floor on Shabbos. But only if it's a floor such as this one, the linoleum, a tile, and only if you're in a city where most of the floors are this way. But if the floor is made from dirt, or even if it happens to be made from linoleum, but most of the floors in that area are made from dirt, then it is prohibited. What are we afraid about? We're afraid that you're going to smooth out a rough surface, which would be a violation of bonin. Carpet sweepers are prohibited. Some disagree, but that's what he passes over here. Yeah, I'm making the square shot. No, I think it's some kind of a move to the hole, it's a weak kind of activity. I think that's the only reason. I don't think any reason.
But if
it's
been weak,
you do that. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason he doesn't like carpet sweeping. Good point, I don't know. It's something to do with it. Okay. He talks here about removing dust from furniture. You may do it with a cloth, but don't polish it. Because polishing it is a problem. So just removing dust with a cloth would be okay. And similarly, removing spider webs with a cloth would be okay. What happens if there's a plumbing problem on Shabbos? The most common one is that the sink or the toilet gets stuck, and you need a plunger in order to free it up. So he writes in the sefer that it's okay if it's what's called the ancient Torah Gadol B'Kam. There's a great need for it. I imagine that usually there is a great need for it.
Because
you have two bathrooms, two kitchens, all right, but then if you don't, it's a problem. It's a problem. We already learned this, if you recall, as we had last time, a long time ago. I mean, you probably remember that I said I don't like it. I'm not happy about this. I'm not happy about this at all. I think if you get a non-Jew to do it for you. Bonin. Broken, you're fixing it. He writes early in the, he says, well, it's not really considered broken. What do you mean it's not considered broken? I don't consider it broken.
You can't use it, it's broken. Yeah, but you can't use it. Otherwise,
it's not a thing. How do you look at it? Do you look at it as broken?
Well, you can't use it, but by doing whatever you do, you can use it again. So it's like fixing it.
There's a famous piece in the Gemara about a pipe which was stuffed up, which is a prohibition, the Torah prohibition of bonin. So there are those who maintain that the only reason why that's prohibited is it was referring to a case which is in front of a pipe along the ground, and now it was stuffed up and it's now leveled to the ground, and now it loses the status of a pipe. Here I'm telling you a verse. They said there, the Gemara says it specifically that I'm right, that it's not allowed. So in order to defend their position, they maintain that the Gemara is referring to a case we have a pipe which is along the level of the ground, and it's been stuffed up with dirt, but now it lost the status of a pipe. Then if you undo that, that's a Torah prohibition of bonin. But in our case, where it's just a regular plumbing unit, even if it gets stuffed up, it never loses its status of a pipe, and therefore to unstuff it would not be a violation of bonin. I find this hard to believe, and therefore I don't accept this leniency unless it's an emergency. Of course, that's for sure, something like that. Other than that, you should get a non-Jew to do it. But it's only true, I concede, it's only true if it's stuffed up completely. Somebody has the toilet or the bathroom or the sink is partially stuffed, and something is still going down. Then I concede it's not considered broken. It's going slowly. But if it's completely stuffed, I don't think you're allowed to fix it on Shabbos unless it's either the Kuach Nefesh or you got a guy to do it. I don't agree with what he says over here.
If it's partially stuffed, then you can do it?
In my opinion, if it's partially stuffed, then yes. If it's totally stuffed, I wouldn't allow it. Okay. You're allowed to hang a deodorizer in a room. And you're allowed to even spray a deodorizer in a room. Nobody will use aerosol cans on Shabbos, that's what he's saying. You're allowed to put some kind of properly in English, kind of sterilizing liquid into the toilet if necessary, but you should not use the blue stuff, because then every time the toilet is used, you are coloring the water blue.
So you can't do it before Shabbos, you think?
Is there a clear version of the same? Yeah?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Is it clear? It's okay.
Does that mean you can't do it before Shabbos? Also.
Well, you can't. He's trying to say if you're using the blue thing, make sure to remove it before Shabbos, or get it out of the system. I don't know how you do that exactly. You have to move it out of the pull it out. I don't know what you do. I would agree though that if you are in a situation where the only facility, if I may use that word, shevutim, as they call it so nicely in there, has this blue thing, that if there's no alternative that you could use it. Because you can find certain leniency with things, like gracious, or whatever. But if you're the boss in your house, you should remove the blue thing before Shabbos. It's a question of tzoveya, of color. And even though that's not your intention, but we've learned many times before, it's still a problem. It's inevitable. It's a creation. Speaking of the bathroom, you're not supposed to cut toilet paper on Shabbos. Make sure it's prepared before Shabbos. Okay, that takes care of the plumbing. So we're talking about especially washing the floor, you want to sweeping and plumbing. Now we go to heating. This is all the house, sweeping, plumbing, now heating. Yes?
If you have, let's say, no tissues and you come out to the closet, it's better to sanitize, not on the preparation floor.
Well, it's better to find tissues. Right? If a person has no alternative, and it's what we call today kavod habrios, it's a sense of human dignity, so then what you should do is rip the paper in an abnormal fashion. Use your teeth, or I don't know, some other way which is...
They shouldn't put along the preparation.
Once you're using your teeth, no matter which way you slice it, it's not going to make a difference. It's not going to come out smooth. So, but that's only if you're stuck. You really should try to avoid this. It's not something which we should, you know, get involved in. We should try to prepare before. Be prepared. Yes?
So, think about the blue dye.
So
let's say you're at someone's house for Shabbos.
Right.
And they use it. Would you be considered,
would you be able to take it out
on Shabbos? Like, on Shabbos?
And then take it out. That's a good question. I don't know how these things work exactly. The best to do is
the back of the tank.
Right, so the best to do is to take it out before Shabbos.
Right, but let's say
you didn't discover it.
It's still there. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's still probably some coloring in it.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. It might be muktzah. But if it's muktzah, we have a certain leniency. But that's going to work in this case. We spoke about it last week, you know, kicking it. Well, I don't know if it's going to work in this case. I wonder how you get rid of this indirectly.
No, but the problem is that even
if... Yeah, I have an idea. Probably called Tiltal and Atzad and Sarah Makomo. If you don't want this thing, or you want to get rid of it, so you can take a tissue and hold it with, move it with a tissue and then put it down elsewhere. Yeah. If you have a tissue, it's just an indirect, or a towel, or whatever, either a washcloth, maybe, it's an indirect, and it's Tiltal and Atzad, and here's it's an effect of Sarah Makomo. You don't want that piece, you want to get rid of it out of the place. That would be a possibility.
But the problem is that the blue stuff is still in the system.
Really?
So the next flush is still going to be coloring it blue.
I see what it says. You remove the blue stuff, then you go away, wait till someone else uses it, and come back. How's that?
But the blue stuff still
looks
like you're not causing any designs already
there. No, but it's not going to die in the water.
It wouldn't go in the water unless you flush it.
Not going to die in the new water that comes in the next when you flush it. New water comes in.
Unless you flush it, it's still going
to
be blue.
What you have to do is you wait till someone else. And then, I just thought of another thing, as I'm speaking. If you can't remove it, I have a nice sort of an idea. You can't remove it, and it's a matter of, you know, cover it up, rear, etc. Just flush abnormally with your elbow, like that. Because we said before, if it's abnormal, then they can be more lenient if it's covered up rear. That'd be the better way to do it. You can't get rid of the blue. Okay, so we spoke about sweeping, and we spoke about cleaning, and we spoke about plumbing. Now, heating. You're not permitted to put the radiator on Shabbos. The old classical radiator that they had, you know, with you turn the thing. When you turn that thing, what happens really is that the water which is in the radiator now, which is cold, will become heated up. That's how it gets your room hot. Because the way when it's closed, there's hot water coming from the boiler downstairs, and it stops before it gets into the unit in your room. That's why it's cold. If you open it, so the hot water rushes in, and it will ultimately heat up the water in the radiator unit, and that's what's called bishul. Bishul is prohibited on Shabbos. You can't do it. You may, however, close the radiator on Shabbos. There's a whole discussion about this. Maybe it's going to... We spoke about it a long, long time ago. Can you turn off hot water on Shabbos? This is the same Shiloh. So someone is saying, if you turn off the hot water, it's going to cause there to be less hot water coming out. Or in this particular case, there'll be less water that has to be heated up. And as a result of that, the fire which is going... And the thermostatic system may go off a little bit earlier than it would otherwise, so you can still make a calculation. Despite all these calculations, it's mutter for whatever reason. Of course, it's by Mazam, it's by Moshe, it's a Chorona Lebrocha. This is considered to be the Kibra. Hankin said the same thing. You may turn off hot water, you may turn off the radiator on Shabbos. Here comes the most important paragraph. How do you walk into a house on Shabbos? He suggests here in this paragraph you should not be allowed to walk into any house on Shabbos. Why? Because the thermostat has to go. You open the door and the cold wind blows in. As a result of that, one second. As a result of that, the thermostat will either go, end of the day, hot, cold will go on earlier, go off later, whatever, that's something to be changed. He writes, okay. Again, quoting from Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's how. Rav Halperin, he got this, maybe it's not allowed. he says, you walk in, you're impacting on the fire. A big problem, why should it be permissible?
Isn't that kind of like the thermostat in the refrigerators and it works the same way?
In the refrigerator, we spoke about it a long time ago, where I thought it's permissible, because in my opinion, even if you press the button which would put the refrigerator motor on, it wouldn't be so bad. We don't even know what's really prohibited about the refrigerator motor. Not so clear.
Well, didn't we say it goes on anyway, so
Not the reason, because you make it go on earlier. The main reason we thought was because it's not clear that it's prohibited in the first place. The circuit to make a motor go on, but over here you're causing fires to go on. That's a much bigger problem.
What about the oven?
Oven's also a problem. We spoke about to open an oven on the thermostat on Shabbos is a big problem because it's going to cause the fire to go on earlier than it would otherwise because some cooler air is going to come into the oven. It's a big problem. So there are those who say it's okay because what we call grumma. We discussed growing at the sea. I don't know if we discussed growing. We had a little last term. We had indirect or delayed reaction. I mean, I told you that the Rav didn't like this business of growing. He didn't consider this to be growing if it's a delayed reaction. It's not so simple, all these things. It's not so simple at all. But open it up, and I really wouldn't recommend it for that reason. So open the front door to your house. Like, what am I going to say? Can't go into your house? Well. Could be the answer. I know the facts. Maybe you'll check out your system in your house. That the fire is always there. All you're doing is making it bigger. You're not starting a fire from scratch. That might be at least somewhat of leniency. The fire is really just getting a little bigger than a little smaller. Or that might be a possible leniency for the fire is on at all times. Maybe, whatever reason, assume that you're allowed to walk into a house on Shabbos, even though it has an impact on the thermostat. And Rav Halperin thinks, no. His house, what does he do? I don't know. He doesn't have a thermostat. If you are in a cold country where it's very uncomfortable, even somewhat unhealthy, to be in a cold room on Shabbos, you may call a non-Jew to put the heat on Shabbos. And the reason is because, as we shall see later, few weeks from now, it's permissible to ask an Anjou to do something to help someone who is considered somewhat sick, a minor illness. And we're all considered sick in the context of COVID. If there are small children there, and some say small but up to the age of 9 actually, then even if it's not so cold, a little bit cold, you may tell the guy to put on the heat. Because children are sensitive to cold. It's only post if you're stuck. It's not ideal. It's far from an ideal. Using a vaporizer on Shabbos is mutter. As long as the water does not get very hot, you have to let it flow. You can put it on before Shabbos, you can add water into it on Shabbos. Try the cold water vaporizer. Okay. This takes care of eating and things of this nature.
Wait, are you going to let
him
use cold
vaporizer? It's warm but not hot, it would also be okay. Very hot, then you can put it on for before Shabbos. So once it runs out of water, you can't do anything if you're eating. You can cook water on Shabbos. Cold water vaporizer, yeah. Not hot. Yeah, you can pick it up, put it. I don't think it's considered muktzah if you're allowed to do it. It's not called muktzah. Klisha will ask Klisha. Look at the Torah Kufa. We spoke about it 2 weeks ago.
Wait, isn't it like when you take it apart and put it back together? Isn't it out of the
boner?
Because each part
cannot. I don't think so. It's not so tight. It's loose. Pick it up. This is called boner.
It locks in. But you put it with this.
I don't need a lock so tight. The one that I know about.
Take off that one piece.
Pick it up and put it down. It's not really a lock.
Each part is dependent on the other. So isn't that like the way you're
thinking? I don't think so.
So you think two parts that you can't do anything with?
I don't think it's boner. I don't think so. Made to come off and on all the time. Open the door. It's boner. The window breaks at Shabbos, over the house again, the window breaks at Shabbos, so obviously the pieces of glass are booked up, but you may remove it with a broom, which is what's called menatzat, or kick it to the side if that's safe. You mentioned over here speaking about windows. If the window has steam on it, you can't write on it. Discussed that before. You may however wipe the steam off the window, but you shouldn't erase any letters or pictures that were drawn there previously.
Yeah, but if it was one that was there from the 3 months ago when you were in it, isn't it still going to be there anyway?
Yeah, sure.
So
I think.
So why can you wipe that away?
Well, if you're not wiping it away, it means a fresh one will be knocked off. That's what I think he means. And I think I mentioned to you before, you're not permitted to knock a nail or a thumbtack into the wall on Shabbos. You can't stick on a wall a hook or something else of this nature with air pressure or with glue. All these may not be put up on the wall or may not be taken off the wall. The question of boner and sosa. A bell should not be used on Shabbos and Yontif, even if it's a bell, it's mechanical and not electric, because you're making noise on Shabbos. It's called Mashmia Kol, or a knocker. That's also really, you should, better not to do that.
The knocker
should really not be used. Use your hands. Unless you have a special Shabbos knocker, he says. Or the Shabbos klopfer. It's meant to ulze the chol, it's a weekday activity. I think that's how he interprets it, and therefore it's permissible. It's set aside for Shabbos. I think it's intrinsically different. That's what I thought. It's permitted to use your hands to open up, to knock on the door. Bang on the door, you knock, knock, who's there? That's okay. It's not considered a Shmoa's call because it's not a specialized kind of sound, and it's not musical, it's just a big make yourself heard. It's not considered, it's included in the prohibition. Yes. Sure, no problem. Play drums is like playing a musical, an amateurish musical instrument.
Like on a plate.
Yeah, on a plate or on the table. You shouldn't do that. Even that's a problem. If you're doing it musically, I'm not good at that, but if you had some kind of a musical accompaniment, I always think if you just bang hands like this, I mean, you're just keeping rhythm. You're not making any noise today. Everything in the world makes a little noise. But that's not your intention to make noise. Your intention is to keep the rhythm to yourself. That's okay. But if you try to make a musical kind of a sound, it's not allowed.
Does that mean you're not allowed to play those kind of games that you know, they're really, like, Indian chief.
My daughter does what she sees at the end of benching, that kind of stuff.
Some of them are keeping the game that you just kind of, if it's musical in nature, it's not a problem.
All right. Now we come to a very practical question for Stern College. Very important question. You got it. Elevators. Shabbos elevator. Is the one page in the entire book Shmir Shabbos, the one page that, you know how this book works, it's mostly you have the top and the bottom, there are footnotes. But there's one page where the footnote is so long, it takes up the whole page. Nothing on top. That's this page. Page Shin Dalet, all about elevators. Yeah, there's another page we just had before, page Reish Tzadayal, it's about, well, that's not really a footnote, it's a small print, but this is the only one. He's trying to justify going down the elevator on Shabbos. Going up is not so bad, believe it or not. Going up, so he writes over here, if you go up, it's not so terrible, it's an automatic Shabbos elevator. Because, you know, what are you doing? What's so terrible? Even though maybe there's a chance that by your going up, it's going to cause more power to be consumed, which ultimately may cause more, a greater fire to be built, to be burned in the Con Edison plant, and who knows where, that's very unlikely. Unlikely. And therefore, you're not really, and as we said before, you're not really adding a new fire. You're only potentially taking a fire which exists in Con Edison somewhere and making it a little bit bigger. He says, that's not so bad. I mentioned that to you before. Every year, it's unlikely it's going to happen. So we can find our heter to go up an elevator on Shabbos. Not so bad. I don't recommend this, frankly. I think you should walk the steps if you can. But the 7 feet wide, so but if you can do the shot on track, you can't manage it. You have to take the elevator. So going up, not so bad. The big problem is going down. Yes.
What do you mean by automatic? Because there are elevators, I understand
that's
happening, but
correct.
The door is set to shut after a certain amount of time, and
correct.
You're the one walking in.
No, it's a show. You can't walk in then. You have to walk in right away and be comfortably ensconced in the elevator before the door is about to close. You shouldn't cause this door to make do anything different with you or without you. Same thing. Right. This is the idea of the Shabbos elevator. There is a good basis to go up. Going down is much more complicated. You say, it's crazy, no, going down should be more lenient, right? That's what I always thought. Well, but you have to know what the technology. Apparently, when you go down an elevator, we know these new modern elevators with computerization, with the modernization, the elevator is very smart. You ever hear of hydroelectric power? Because the water goes top to bottom, they use, they harness the power, right? Well, guess what? The power of your weight is being harnessed by the elevator system. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Unless they did a fancy system here in Stern. I doubt it. This wasn't built for Stern College, you know. It was built for somebody else. But if we, like at Shari Tzedek, when they built the elevator, they built this to specifications. It shouldn't happen this way. Or there's a way to bypass that. So maybe if enough students complain, they'll find a way to bypass it over here too. Calling Rabbi Halpern from the Holy City. But he says a very serious issue. You're going in the elevator. Your weight is considered your force if you're doing it. And I think he's right about that. And then your weight or force is powering certain things. For example, the electricity generated by your weight is used by the system to provide power, which is needed by the system, for example, to stop the elevator. Has to stop at the ground floor. It requires power to make it stop. It's going to right go boom, crash, that's the shelf. It requires power to stop the gravity. You know, it's going down, you have to stop it. You know, an elevator that works right, it stops so very nice, gradual, you know, it's a bump like some of the others do. What? How does that happen? It happens because this electric power is being used to achieve that. And guess where the power comes from? Sure, it comes from Con Edison. But if you're in the elevator, it comes from you. So they're going down is a big problem.
What if you were to get in and someone else, there's already like, let's say, five people in there. This is your
team. Every one of the five people provides more power.
So even getting into a full elevator, you're still giving
even
more
even a full
power.
Elevator, apparently. I'm not an expert in elevators, but apparently even a full elevator, there is an issue of...
That's what I'm saying.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't get the faster though. If it does not. I'll explain to you why. Because the entire system is very sophisticated, and it's a compensation system. In other words, you need X amount of power to have the elevator come to a gradual stop. What is X? Well, the more people, the greater the X. Okay? Right? Because you have to stop it from rolling to come down faster.
So it doesn't.
Where did the power come from? So some of it comes from Con Edison, and some of it's the same money. Comes from the power generated by the weight of the people themselves. A very sophisticated idea. And this means that your weight is achieving the generation of power to accomplish something. Sometimes, he writes here, with this extra power, it may be used to turn on the lights. Those lights in the elevator city, in the business system or in the halls, so they use your weight to provide the power to put on the lights. Crazy, you can't do that in shops.
What about walking into an elevator with a guy?
With a what?
With a guy.
So what?
Does that make any difference?
No. The guy has the guy's weight, and you have the Jew's weight.
Going up.
That's a difference in theory. When you walk in with a guy to an elevator going up, thou have the same halachic status as walking into an automatic elevator. Same thing. Because you're not telling the guy to do anything, which we'll get to later when we're about telling the guy, which you're not allowed to. Under normal conditions. Nevertheless, your weight is a factor, so what's the problem?
Going up
The going up is it's okay, the going down is the problem.
If the guy asks you what floor you're going to, are you allowed to tell him?
Wherever you're going, I'm going. Okay. Wherever you're going, I'm going. Yes?
What about the problem with if you
want
to talk to your body?
We discussed that before. So you go in. You go in quickly, well, long before the door would have closed anyway.
Is electric
guard? Sure, electric guard. The electric guard is to prevent the door from closing if you're walking by. But the door wouldn't have closed anyway for the first 10 seconds, whatever it is, 5 seconds. So make sure you go in quickly the first 5 seconds, because then nothing is impacted upon. Yes. I can explain to you. When you go down. So your weight is being used by the system to provide power. And that power can do things which are prohibited on. Yeah, but you're providing the power. You're providing power, and with that power, things are being done. Now, it's arguable. Now what's being done? What's being done is an effect the motor goes on. We said before that the motor going on is not so tremendously prohibited either. That's why there is ground to be lenient. If it's not referring to a case where your power puts lights on. Like whenever we speak about electrical appliances, and we always have to distinguish between lights and everything else. Lights, regular, normal lights, certainly incandescent lights, fluorescent maybe a little bit different. But incandescent lights we assume is considered to be mavir, the lighting of fire. The light of fire, this is something which is a serious Torah prohibition. If your power, if your weight is lighting the fire, then it's very, very bad. So I don't know, we have to speak to the people who are in charge of Otis Elevators and these kind of companies to find out how often it is that your weight puts on lights, and how often is it just stops the elevator with your power. So the former is much more strict than the latter. Yes?
If you can't walk, right? So it's better to stay in your room, let's say, if you're in a hotel. Like if you can't take the stairs, there's no way you're in a wheelchair or whatever. So it's better not to go down the elevator at all, to even the chaplet. Is there any up there at all?
The heather is, and I just told you, that there's some false people who say that it's permissible even to go down for a number of reasons. I'll give you the reasons of Shlomo Zalman that's what takes up the whole page. He tries to explain why it can be permissible. One reason he gives is nothing changes. Whatever you do, nothing has changed. Even though you are creating a power system which wouldn't have been there anyway, but nothing really changes. It would have happened the same way with the other power. He tries to prove it from many different sources, that if nothing changes de facto, even though now it receives power from your way, it's not so bad. Gives a number of interesting examples which were. I'll give you one example. He said like this. A person is permitted to move an oil lamp when there's no problem books it. And he brings sources to prove that. So he asks the question, how can you do that? When you move the oil lamp, you know what's going to happen? The liquid's going to move, and the oil, which would otherwise not have burned at the present time, is burning now, and that which would have burned is not burning now. So how can you move it? You're causing oil which would not have burned to burn. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman writes that since the fire would have burned anyway, so then it's not, you didn't really change anything. So that's why he says maybe it's not so bad. One more thing. He said that even if lights go on as the result of the standing elevator, which sometimes apparently happens, we attribute that to the elevator. We don't attribute that to the extra weight of the person, because it would have gone down anyway. And then here's another interesting concept. There's a concept in halacha called, look at this, zeh yochol v'zeh eino yochol. What does that mean? That two people do something. One could do it by himself, and the other one could not. So the halacha then attributes the act to the one who could, and the one who cannot is called misayeya ein bal mamish. What he's doing is really completely secondary. It's not really prohibited, strictly speaking. So Shlomo Zalman writes as follows. The elevator can do it. The way of the elevator, the elevator car can do it. What can it do? It can stop itself before it crashes. It can put the lights on. Whereas a human being by himself can't do anything. A human being without the way of the elevator, nothing. It's no better. So you consider that, but the human weight might be considered in the category of Ze'en or Yoho. So Messiah ain't going to happen. This is where Shlomo, those are his main points. So based on these points, someone who absolutely has to use the elevator going down, someone who's sick or can't move otherwise, so there's there a ground to be lenient. But it's not so simple. So I would say, if you're in the dorm and you're on Shabbos, if you're on the lower floor, you should walk both ways. If you're in a very high floor and you can't get up, can't do it, I don't know why, but you can't. So, and there's some kind of temptation to go up, but at least walk down. Down is easier than up. Down is a machaya. People pay money to go skiing, I don't understand. People go spend thousands of dollars, travel thousands of miles to go skiing. So walk down the steps. I mean, what about that? I don't understand. Can't see it. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Let's say you're with your brother that you can't walk and they're in a wheelchair, so you would have to push themselves. So would you be
the
person in the elevator?
Well, the best thing to do in that case is to wheel the person into the elevator, run out quickly before the door opens, and then run up and down quickly and make sure you catch get there faster than the elevator. Like in the movies, you know?
You got
two different people. Oh, that's the best. You got two people. Have one person and another. But we said before, the person in the wheelchair can rely on the lenient view. That person has a problem. So that's okay. You have to go in with the person you have to, but you can avoid it. Right? Right. You have two people, one on top, one on the bottom. It makes it a little bit easier. Yes?
What if he gets stuck in the elevator?
So if you're right, you're going in the first place. It's an emergency. You can, if it is, since it's an emergency, wait for that stuff, don't. Very likely someone will discover that it's stuck and will bail you out. I hope. Okay. What about escalators? That's okay. Escalators are okay. Where? Very simple. Go to a hospital. Go to Columbia Presbyterian. They have the big escalators, the main building now, up and down escalators. What about electric doors? That's a big problem. The ones that work with the electric, you step on the, that's a big problem. You really shouldn't do that, child, because you're causing the motor to go on and then to open it.
Right? Just walk through with someone.
Big problem. What?
You stick your hands under the
water. I also got an electrical system, I guess. I don't think you should do that. Yes?
Let's say you're going to the hospital because you're on shop, someone else walks in and then you walk in afterwards. That's okay?
So walk in
next
lockstep with that person. You walk right side by side. And that way you won't be causing anything. What about a combination lock? You line up the barrel, not the one that goes, that's certainly okay. But when you line up the, again, the attaché case, then that's okay. You might put it in Kosei, writing a certain number. That's okay. But see, what he does not have in this book, he's 15 years old, 16 years old by now, is the biggest prompt in all the hotels. Not have the electric locks. Electric locks. Which is an electrical system. That's a big problem. The major problem. You really can't use those things on Shabbos. The electric locks. What? If it's a mechanical lock, then I think it's okay. But most of these card keys and other keys are electrical. It's a big problem. And I think almost all the hotels now start with this case. A big problem.
So what do you have it like? What do you do if you get to hotel Friday? I mean, like, how do you
so
get
you
around
that?
No, but take it by leaving, by opening the door once you're on the inside, by opening it and then walking out and then shutting it, you're causing it to automatically lock, therefore causing yourself to have to keep the key to open it.
What's your turn? Stay off the shutters. Okay, I'm in favor. once you're involved in that situation. I know there are some hotels they have know about this. Like they told me on Hancock, the Jewish businessman traveled there. And they already know what these people with the beard, with the. Electrical systems for sure, of course. You leave the card in the front desk. And my name is Mr. X. I'm in this room. You recognize me, of course. Please allow your your housekeeping staff to come into my room and let me in. Not an ideal, but okay. Good. This, therefore, ends Perek Chof Gimel, the 23rd chapter. You leave the car in the front desk. My name is Mr. X. I'm in this room. You recognize me, of course. Please allow your housekeeping staff to come into my room and let me in. Not an ideal, but what can I do? Okay. Good. This, therefore, ends Perek Chof Gimel, the 23rd chapter of Shemir Shabbos. That was what we spoke about, and others that we didn't omit it. We will discuss the more practical elements of this Perek. Now we start Perek Chof Dalet, which is entitled Oel and Mechitza. Oel and Mechitza means literally a tent, a roof, and a wall. There is a prohibition called Bonan Shabbos. You're not supposed to build a house. If you make a house on Shabbos, it's obviously a Torah prohibition. It's one of the 39 categories of work called Bonan. The rabbis prohibited even making a temporary tent or covering on Shabbos if you start from scratch. But if you are just extending a temporary tent, then it is permissible. These are the ground rules. I should add, if you can't make it, you can't unmake it. If you can't fill it up, you can't take it down. That's called soser. Undo it. Okay, let's give a few examples. You want to put a roof above you to protect you from the sun and from the rain or from the mosquitoes. You may not start from scratch and put some kind of roof above you, even though it's temporary. And this prohibition exists even if there are no walls. How to set up? Well, if there's holes in the four corners. Not allowed. But I should add, we assume it's only prohibited if it could stand of its own accord. If you have four poles, and you put the covering on top of it. But if you hold it up with your own hands, and if you let go, it just falls to the ground, and there's nothing holding it up but your own hands, we assume that's okay. I'll give you an example of that. Can you hold up a chuppah or a talis? You open up and hold up a talus. Like they have a Simchas Torah. You ever see they have a talus? They hold it over the Chasim Gracious or Kol HaNorim, whatever. They hold the talus over everybody's head. So we assume that's okay. If you let go, it just falls to the ground. Apparently, the folks, I don't know if they still do it now, but the Kotel, if it would rain, they would hold the talus over the Sefer Torah. It shouldn't get wet. Now they probably go inside. I don't know if they had the indoors in those days. But they said that's okay also. Okay. What happens in the following case? You want to add to a pre-existing tent, as I mentioned before. After the pre-existing tent, or a roof, has to be at least a tefa, the size of a fist. And you have to extend it from that side going out. So it has to be a fist, and then you're going to extend it this way, as opposed to extending it this way. Then if you do it this way, right now it's prohibited before you even get to the, has to be an extension. I should add that this fist has to be something which is a real tent, which is there for its own sake, as opposed to, for example, let's say you have an awning, and you want to extend an awning on Shabbos. Every awning you wrap it up, you know, even the completely wrapped up awning is going to be a tepa. So new, prohibited. Why? Because there it's not extended for the sake of intent. It's extended only because you have no alternative. What are you going to do? You can't make it disappear into nothing. That doesn't count for a tepa. It has to be a tepa beyond the wound up part of the awning. Yes?
A lot of people have sukkahs that the roots come like part of the house, and then the roof just comes off, like you roll up the roof.
So, what would there be a very major problem. People have various coverings of their sukkahs. The problem on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur. Sukkahs, even if it's not Shabbos, is a problem. A very serious problem. One of the dispensations would be to have a part of the sukkah covered at all times, a tepa, beyond the roll, and then, if it starts to rain, you can extend the remainder. And when it stops raining, when you wind it up again, roll it up again, you make sure to leave the tepa extended beyond the roll. Right? That's the only way. There's another possible way. It's risky, but it's possible. And that is, if the covering is along the roof, not above the roof, but along the roof. And the reason that's okay is, if there's no tefach in height between the skah and the roof above it, so it's not considered to be an oil. You'll have to set the table on Shabbos. With an oil, you put a table over the table. And the table is touching the table. It's not a tefach between them. But the dangerous part is it may collapse also. Too much water gets on it, it may collapse. Boom. But if you're a good engineer and you figure out how to do it, you'll be permissible from the perspective of Hilchos Shabbos. Yes?
Can you make a tent like with the blanket for Shabbos? Like,
a tent with a blanket?
Like with your kids.
Kids play with pillows
and
they're playing.
Kids play with pillows
like
and
they
blankets.
Take the cat pillow.
Yeah, take all the pillows from the couch. You feel like a fortune. You feel like a fortune. Yeah. It's so much fun.
It's so much fun, but it's probably not allowed.
Sorry,
no, it's going to
fall down
in the
middle.
Yeah,
it's not like
it's going to fall down. It's going to fall down. Seems to me that made property can last for 10 hours. Okay. No, I mean, it's not knocked down. I'll give you an example of a problem. Let's say you have a baby carriage, and you want to put a cover over the carriage, the baby shouldn't get wet, it shouldn't get cold. That's a serious problem. You're making an OL. You're making an OL on Shabbos. We'll come to umbrella soon. We'll come. However, if you put a tefach covering from before Shabbos, you may extend it on Shabbos. You know, they have some of these coverings for carriages are snaps. They have snaps there, got 10 snaps around the three sides. So what you can do is, when you remove the cover, let's take the baby out, let some of the snaps at the foot of the carriage remain in place. So that the covering remains in place of tefach, and there's no roll over there. So even one tefach will suffice. So let's say for the price of the first snap on each side, it would probably be enough. That was about 3.5 inches. And then you put the baby in, you can snap up the other three, four snaps on each side. That'll be an extension of an existing, a pre-existing ova. That'll be okay. Now we come to the very important dispensation. The halacha states that if I have an ohel which exists already now in potential, all that's required to make it actual is the redeploying, if you will, of this same system by, for example, opening or closing a handle. I'll give you the best example. Baby carriages. Baby carriages have very often traditional baby carriages. They still make them anymore. Traditional baby carriages have, you know, like I described before, and at the front where the head is, they have a, what would you call it? A roof?
A sun canopy.
Look at the old carriage from 20 years ago. Now it's with strollers and mice. The old style baby carriage. They don't make it anymore.
No, it's still, you mean the front that folds up to that?
So, let's take that example. So, in that case, it would be permissible to open that carriage on Shabbos, to open the roof of the carriage. The reason is as follows. That roof is there potentially from before Shabbos. You know how it works with an elbow, kind of elbow joint. Are you familiar with that? It's a two-part metal piece. You go like this to open it, this to close it. Are you familiar? Am I making myself clear? No, not clear?
It's like a metal frame.
So look, you'll see it's a metal frame, and you go, it opens up, it goes back and close. That's considered to be a potential tent, even when the roof is down. You're not creating a new tent. You're just extending it. You're just developing it, but their potential from beforehand. It's a very important dispensation. And once you do that, here's the interesting part, once you put up the roof on Shabbos, you're permitted to extend onto the roof some other covering, such as a mosquito net, keep the mosquitoes out of the way away from the baby on Shabbos, because you're extending to what is considered al pi halacha to be a pre-existing tent which existed before Shabbos. You know, it didn't exist in real life, but it existed in potential. Now, you may ask, and it's a good question, if this is permissible,
sorry? Why can't you open an umbrella?
That's the question I'm looking for. Why can't you open an umbrella?
It's not
our umbrellas today exist in potential when they're still closed. What does it do? Has one little snap, it goes, shoots up, but it's all on those same kind of hinges. So what's wrong with opening an umbrella on Shabbos? I'll answer you. Nothing. But you shouldn't do it anyway. And the proof is as follows. If it would be just a matter of something wrong with opening an umbrella on Shabbos, then why can't you open it before Shabbos? And then walk out in the street with an umbrella on Shabbos? What's wrong? Open it before Shabbos. That's certainly going to be okay, right? Because you didn't make any tent on Shabbos. The answer is, according to the strict halacha, we assume it's permissible whether you're opening it on Shabbos, opening it before Shabbos. But despite that fact, there is a strong and old custom to be strict in this matter. It's considered to be what's called uvda d'chol, somehow a weekday kind of an activity, and it will cause additional chilul Shabbos, and therefore it is completely prohibited. Interestingly, I once had a story people came to my shul for Shabbos, and a group of Israelis, kids, teenagers, came to Riverdale for Shabbos some weekend. End of my shul from Mincha Maariv. Somebody came to me and said, Rabbi, I went downstairs in the room, and I see 5 or 10 umbrellas are open before Shabbos. What's going on over here? So I ran down, I saw these young men were opening the umbrellas. It was raining very hard, they don't want to get wet on the way home. They opened the umbrella. I said, what are you doing? They said, well, what's wrong? You heard in Israel that it's okay, what's wrong? So instead of arguing with them, which is the thought I said, you're right, maybe it's okay, go to the strict halacha, but our custom is not to use it. Okay, all right, that's the case, they just close the umbrellas. But the truth is, they were really right. According to strict halacha, we have an Eruv. Especially open before Shabbos, if you open on Shabbos, it should be okay, strictly speaking. But it is, as Rabbi Neubert calls over here, Geder Godru Gedole Adoros. The great Torah scholars made a Geder, a fence, specific injunction not to do these things on Shabbos. Interestingly, Chazon Ish, who was the one who was most strict about it, claims that the only time it's prohibited is an umbrella that we walk around with on Shabbos in the streets in the rain. But he says, if you have an umbrella which is attached to the ground, like the kind of over a picnic table or something like that, so the Chazon Ish, that's okay. And Shlomo Zalman is not so sure. Not so simple. After all, Shlomo Zalman says, we know that generally speaking, when we talk about boneh, it's much more strict if it's attached to the ground than if it's separate from the ground. So it's hard to imagine we consider that an umbrella which is attached to the ground over a picnic table should be more lenient than an umbrella which you hold in your hand. He's not exactly excited about this lenient. As Nish says, listen, it's permitted for a different reason. It has hinges. And it's only a gedder gozel, it's a weekday activity. Chazon Ish claims it's a weekday activity limited to an umbrella which you carry around. Doesn't apply to the umbrella and picnic table. That's what they're arguing about. Okay. All that we've spoken about until now, every case of OL was one in which he had intention to protect or to cover something. What if you make an OL and that's not your intention? Right? It's not your intention to protect something underneath the OL at all. Then it's halacha as follows. If there are no walls, or if there are pre-existing walls, or if the walls are put up after the roof, all those three cases, it is permissible. Sure. Let me finish the other half of the sentence. When is it prohibited? If you put up in the following order, walls and then roof. And you do it all on Shabbos. To put up walls and then a roof on Shabbos would be prohibited even if you do not have intention that it should serve as a protective device what's underneath it. Hold on. And if you put up all four walls on Shabbos, it's prohibited even though you don't have intention to use that. Space underneath it for anything. If it has only two or three walls, then it's prohibited only if you intend to use the area underneath that roof. Even though you don't intend to use it with the roof as a protective device, but you're going to use the space for some other purpose, without the need for protective device, because you're going to use it anyway, then it's prohibited even two or three wolves. If you're not going to use it at all, it's prohibited only if there are four wolves. So let's review briefly. If you make four wolves, and then the roof, it's usher no matter what. If you make two or three wolves, and then the roof, it's usher if you plan to use that area. That's the only thing. Let's say over here, the desk. I have my feet are underneath the table. I don't need the table to protect my feet. Just there. So that would be prohibited only if there's four wolves. Hold on, let me take that back. That would be prohibited if I intend to use the air underneath it, even if it's two or three wolves. If, however, it's something a little bit abnormal, one of three things. Either I put up the walls after the roof, or there are no walls, or the walls are this one before Shabbos, then it's alright. A little bit complicated, but those are the rules and regulations.
And you put up walls after the roof.
You simple, you actually hold it with your hands, and you put the walls underneath, and then let it rest on it. Relevant. Can you think of examples of this? Yes? I didn't say that. I said that if you make it for protection, it's prohibited. If you don't make it for protection, then if you have four walls, if you build four walls and then a roof, it's always prohibited. If you build two walls and a roof, or three walls and a roof, then it's prohibited only if you need the space underneath it. Even if it's not for protection. If it's protection, it's always prohibited, even with no walls, as we discussed earlier, as long as it can stand by itself.
These are cases where it could be.
Right. Is there a problem with opening a chair on Shabbos like this? Look, see this chair? Chairs like this, not like this. Now it's an oval, right? What do you say?
You're not using a
wall. What do you mean? For a different reason. On a hinge. It's different. It's there when the potential before it's on a hinge. That's why it's okay. But otherwise, it would depend upon the various parameters we spoke about earlier. So, what case do we ever make tents? Give me a practical example of all this. Is there any? Well, what about opening a folding table on Shabbos?
Possibly.
That could be a problem.
Putting
a leaf into a folding table on top. Those are the problems. So that's what he discusses over here. He writes as follows. I'll read you what he says. A folding table that folds one, basically one piece, has four legs in the top, and you fold the four legs in the top, it becomes portable, that's okay. That's what he says. And then he goes further and says, you can have a table, which is, extendable table? Yeah, a leaf in. He even permits putting a leaf in. And he even says it's allowed to put what he calls the pins, into the... into the hole. Well, the reason why it's permissible is all you're doing is extending a pre-existing ohel. And apparently he considers the the insertion of the pin, something which is very loose, not so permanent, comes in and out on a regular basis. But if it would be very, very tight, it would be a problem of bonus. Yes? Sulfabet is permissible, for sure. Okay. We've spoken until now about roofs that go in this direction, horizontally. What about mechitzas that go in vertically? Is there any problem with mechitza? Depends. If it's a mechitza kavua, permanent wall, it's prohibited by the Torah. Build it. If it's only temporary, although we say, in contrast to the roof, which you mentioned before, it's prohibited even if it's only temporary. If it's a mechitza and it's temporary, it is permissible. There is an exception. The exception is what the Gemara calls, the Rishonim call, mechitza materis, a mechitza which has a specific halakhic impact. For example, it makes an eruv on Shabbos. Without this mechitza, you couldn't carry. Now you can carry. It's something that lends it some weeks back. These are some examples. We're going to have to stop here. Give the Shem next week. I'd like to, if I can, do the next program, but then we'll have the test.
One side of the curtain, the other side of the